Thank you. I have a couple of items that I guess I think a whole lot of. Back when I was somewhere around 10 years old, I had a Sunday school teacher give me a little knife. I've still got that knife. I carried it a long time, and I just kind of laid it aside. Luke Hines was my Sunday school teacher, and he gave all of his boys a knife for Christmas. The other thing I have is a bulletin. This bulletin is dated March 25th, 1951. The thing about this bulletin, it says, those who united with the Kingston Avenue Methodist Church last Sunday were Charlene Hickey, Melodine McNally, Gail Whitus, Dorothy Lawson, Mary Lee Andrews, Nancy Mee, Eddie Newman, Patsy Alberson, James Watts, J. Lee Meadows, and Jimmy Poston. My mother had passed away about a year ago, and in going through her things, she had saved this. So that's really something for, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little croupy here. That's something I really cherish. Gonna make a few remarks and try to tie in some, maybe some loose ends, and tell you a few things that you may have heard 100 times, just to give you a little history on the Kingston Avenue Methodist Church, and it'll tie back into the Rockwood United Methodist Church. The war between the states brought many changes in the lives of persons living in this area. The conflict brought Northern General John T. Wilder, one of the most noted commanders in the Union Army, who recognized that here in Rockwood was one of the areas that held great possibilities for industrial development. He saw that there was the Tennessee River upon which barges could be floated for shipping. Land held great amounts of iron ore. Nearby ridges contained large deposits of coal. He believed that here was the ideal location to build the first furnace south of the Ohio to be used to make iron out of mineral coal. After the war ended, General Wilder met with Southern Captain W.H. McAwee, and they began to discuss the possibilities of locating a furnace in this area. Captain McAwee agreed to stay here and buy the land. General Wilder went back to Indiana and set up the group of stockholders. The stockholders consisted of himself, E.R. Forsyth, W.O. Rockwood, H.S. Chamberlain, and J.M. Lord. Of course, Mr. Rockwood was elected chairman of the corporation, and a new city was founded in, as you may have guessed, the city was called Rockwood. Captain McAlew was able to buy 728 acres of land from J.W. Brown and the heirs of the G.H. Kimbrough. In March 21st, 1868, the first shipment of materials to build a furnace arrived. On December 8th, 1868, that furnace was completed and operated continuously for almost 100 years before the furnace was finally closed in 1968. Now, you may be asking what all this has to do with the Methodist Episcopal Church North. Well, as you remember, the Civil War and the issue of slavery divided not only families, but it also divided churches of all denominations. That's simply what happened here in Rockwood. As a result of that division, sometime in the 1880s or 1860s, General Wilder, Major Rockwood, Captain Harris, R.B. Thompson, and others organized the Methodist Episcopal Church North in a slab building near the old Tennessee Iron Products Chemical Corporation machine shop. As the city grew and the needs changed, the old slab building that held the church for so long was abandoned, and in 1894, a new church was erected on Kingston Avenue. As this church settled into the community, so did the leaders and leadership in the congregation. First was a new name. Methodist Episcopal Church was changed to Kingston Avenue Methodist Church. New leadership, among them was Morris Phillips, who forged our first bell at the Old Tennessee Products and Chemical Corporation foundry. Dr. Tom Phillips, who served the city as a mayor. Some of those individuals I remember, and some of those individuals that had probably as big an impact on my life as anybody as a young Christian, was Harry T. and Belle Molino, Mapy Evans, Juanita Hanna, Ike and Elizabeth Barnett, Robert and Marie Thompson, John and Orlando Alberson, Ira Pratt, the official bell ringer and janitor of the church, George Dale, and many of y'all knew George. He was our organist there, and then came to the other church. Luke and Marie Hines, Ed and Ruth Gibson, Joe and Marie Bobbitt, Paul and Marie Halton, John and Catherine Martin, Carl and Avis Mee, Homer and Eliza Poston, Verda and Marie Alberson, Tom and Mary Elizabeth Mays, Hugh and Margaret Crabtree, Lloyd and Nola Bowles, Earl and Vern Alexander, James and Lennis Watts, Glenn and Ruby Williams, Guy and Anna Meadows, Jack and Georgia Crothers, Carl and Ruth Dunn, Jack and Naomi Hartman. And I can't say that without it probably surprise him a little bit, but in that Jack and Naomi Hartman was Tom Martin. Tom Martin came down and worked with us in our Methodist Youth Fellowship program. Took us a lot of places. Thank you for that, Tom. And I could go on and on, but on the night of December the 20th, 1960, Kingston Avenue Methodist Church was totally destroyed by a fire. And another new direction took place in the life of the Methodist Church, as our two churches that became divided so long ago now become one again. Thank you.
Well, James has pretty well covered the history of the churches. The First Methodist Church was the Methodist Episcopal Church South. And at some point, and I don't really know when, the name was changed to the First Methodist Church. And I was asked to give a few memories of growing up. Of course, I started attending that church probably when I was a month old. I don't really remember a lot from back then, but the first memories I have is of the children's program at the church. And we had an assembly area behind the sanctuary of the church, and we would meet there each Sunday morning. Then we would go to our Sunday school classes, and they were all around the wall of that. And the biggest memories I have are our Easter egg hunts. And we always have those behind the Coca-Cola plant which was on Kingston Avenue, and there was a field behind it. And Miss Lucy Green lived on Douglas Avenue, right across from the field, and she was the one that hosted the Easter egg hunts every year. And she always told a story about me, that when I was little, that I told her one day, that I told her I wanted to tell her something, then I kissed her on the cheek. And she told that story for the rest of her life. And then the other thing was our Christmas Eve services that we always had at the church. And that was just a tradition that everybody went to the Christmas Eve service. And then they always handed out the little treat bags after church. And we had an apple and an orange and maybe a chewing gum and candy and things like that. But the experience of growing up in that church was always happy. The adults of that church always bent over backward to make sure that the children had a good time and that we were watched over and taken care of. Then when we went into the youth, when the new parsonage was built, I think it was in 1954, then the old parsonage that was right around the corner on Kingston Avenue was turned into classrooms for the youth. So we didn't have our little assembly in the church anymore. We had our assembly in the parsonage. And then that's where we had our classrooms. And it was mainly junior high and up. And we did a lot of things in the church. We had a fairly active youth organization. And we always had a youth softball team that played in the summertime. I wasn't real good at it, but I still had a good time. There was a lot of boys in the church that Jim Jarvis, Mike Smith, Mike Shelton, the McCullough twins, and they were pretty good at it, but they let me play anyway. And then after the two churches joined, the youth program really took off. And we had a lot of youth. We did a lot of things. We had a lot of parties. We had a youth choir. We had a little singing group of me and Larry McNally and Alice Wright and Larry's mother, Polly. And we were called the Whatnots. And Jeannie Mason used to always say that a whatnot was something that really was not good for anything, but you didn't want to throw them away. And so when the new church was built, C.N. Prophet, who I'm sorry to say is no longer with us, he was the first president of the MYF when we moved to the church. And I was a junior in high school, and Miss Dawn Hood, I thought she was here, she was my junior English teacher. And there's a little story about her that y'all probably don't know. She started teaching when she was 12, that's why she still looks so young. But I guess most of my memories of that church were very pleasant memories. They were very happy memories. And the adults of that church always took care of the children and the youth and looked after them. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. I've been coming to this church since the first Sunday in January of 1994. And what a ride it's been and will continue to be. One of the first things I remember, or they told me happened, was I remember Billy Evans and Opal Jarvis over there in that nursery. And they had a large part in raising me, keeping me from being a hellion that I could have been. I could have been a lot worse. When I started doing the youth program in junior high, one of the bigger things I really loved was our trips to Resurrection every year. That we, the youth and then some friends or whoever, how many people we could fit in a bus or several cars, would go up to Gatlinburg, Tennessee and do the yearly Methodist Holston Conference youth youth trip. I really love that. I'll always appreciate the opportunity that I was given to experience the Lord's Word in a unique and meaningful way. There was something special about trudging through those icy cold Gatlinburg streets, sliding on the ice down the hill to the convention center every year with my friends and my brother. I'll always love that. A lot of you people here today have made a big difference in who I have become. I just wanted to thank some of you, the youth leaders I've had throughout the years, Terry especially, and Matt Gaskins, and Kayla Thompson, Keith, Jerry Meadows, and Fred Hammer, and my mother especially. And then all the other ones who helped along the way. It was a group effort, and I really loved every minute of it. This church has helped shape me in a way that I'm glad to see, and I'm really looking forward to being a part of it in the future. Thank you.
In March of 1964, I was finishing my first year of teaching school. I was at Morristown High School, where a person some of you may know named Jack Pemberton was the assistant principal. There's my first connection to Rockwood. In March of 1964, Don graduated from UT. He was hired by the Tennessee Department of Transportation and was assigned to work in the Harriman Construction Office. Neither of us knew very much about this area, but fortunately for both of us, the first people that Don met when he came to work guided him to Rockwood to find a place to live. We got married on June 6th of 1964. So yes, we've been married 50 years. Thank you very much. After we got married, we moved into an apartment which was right across the street from the back parking lot of this church. It was a little row of three apartments that were where the Silver Angels building is now, that building that Glenn and Jane owned for a time. At the time we moved in there, this building was not quite finished. So we watched that summer the finishing touches being applied. As a matter of fact, the first time we were in this sanctuary, there was no carpet and there were no pews. I never knew until today who it was who helped sweep this sanctuary to get ready for the carpeting. Alice McNally mentioned to me that she helped do that. Probably should say that at this time, Don and I neither were Methodists. Now, Don has a story to tell.
Well, as Becky said, we moved into this apartment here in 1964. And sometime that summer, I was home alone one afternoon. And when you're home alone, things seem to happen, you know. There was a knock on the door, and I answered it, and there stood a tall, dark-haired, distinguished-looking gentleman. He introduced himself as the Reverend John Weichel, pastor of the New Methodist Church across the street. He said they were testing the outdoor sound system, and he wondered if I had a phonograph record he could borrow. I said, "Why, sure." I went to the stack, and of course, I grabbed the first one off of there. And can y'all see what this is? Ray Charles. It was released in 1962, this album was. He looked at it and he says, "Do you have any religious music?" I said, "Well, yeah," I said. And I went over in the stack and I dug down and I got this one. It's a Tennessee Arnie Ford and the Jordanaires, and it was released in 1959. Now, in looking at this, I want to read you this paragraph that's on the back of this album. That Arnie Ford was just a boy when he first started singing hymns in Methodist Church in the little Tennessee town of Bristol where he was born. All during his growing up years, he was a member of the choir. Because because that's where he could combine his love of singing and his love of God. As the years passed, not only his voice, but his faith grew stronger. When he achieved success on radio, on television, on records, songs of faith and devotion were still a major part of his life. His shows have always ended with a hymn, and Ernie's albums or religious songs are always warmly received. Now, if, looking on the back of this, if the Reverend Weichel had played this one, he might have played, the sound that come out here might have been Bye Bye Love, or Born to Lose, or Hey Good Looking. Instead, probably No Tears in Heaven, Precious Memories, or Where Could I Go? Now, personally, I think that either one of these would have been appropriate. And I really think that, and I knew Keith, if you were telling Nancy and Wanda that I believe that John Weichel felt the same, that it be, either one had been appropriate. And now, for all those that remember Tennessee Ernie Ford, bless your little pea-picking heart.
I always get to have the last word. Don and I were not at that first service in August of 1964, but we did soon begin attending church here. The Pairs and Spares class was formed. We became members of the church in early spring of 1965. We have three children. All three of them were baptized and confirmed at this altar. Barbara was married here. Barbara's here today with her husband and her older daughter, Sydney. Her husband, Brent, and her older daughter, Sydney. We're glad they're here. She and both our sons, Joe and Sam, and their families, along with a lot of other people I could name who started out here, now live in other communities and are active in other churches. The influence of this church continues to be felt here, certainly, but it continues to be felt in a lot of different places, some of them not too far away, but some of them in all kinds of places all around the world. Don and I want to give this really important historical artifact to the church to be put in the archives with some of the other important stuff that's back there that you've seen today, so that when the 100th anniversary in this place is observed, as it will be, I'm confident, people can know what the first music was that was played on those outdoor speakers. But you can't have my Ray Charles.
Say amen. Brother Keith is here. I feel like Moses must have felt when he was there in that wilderness component watching over the sheep, and the Lord said, Moses, take off your shoes. This is holy ground. To stand in this beautiful sanctuary for such an occasion as this, I do bring greetings from our Bishop, Mary Virginia Teller. And it's just a privilege to be here with the current pastor and a former pastor, and with all of you. My first engagement with Rockwood United Methodist Church was in the fall of November 09. I was a rookie district superintendent, and the gentleman that was transporting me to this church, his name is Harold Apsher. He's a good member of Beaver Ridge. And he shared with me, Adam, you're new to the district, and you don't really know your way around. And, well, I just want to drive you over to Rockwood. And so we got in his car, And now I know exactly what happened that night. We got on 70, I believe it is, and we stopped at this church, and he said, Adam, we're at the church. And we went in, and they were having dinner. I went in and washed my hands and came out, and Harold said, Adam, this is the wrong church. We stopped at Caney Baptist Church. And so can you imagine, brand new district superintendent, I have to conduct a charge conference. And when Harold and I arrived here at Rockwood, I met Glenn Long. He was very gracious indeed, and understood the delay. And my experiences, Jim, and my experiences, Keith, with Rockwood have been wonderful. We worked through some things with the Pastor Parish Committee, and each and every time that Charlotte and I have visited this church, we have been blessed with the warm Christian love. And just as Ms. Lay indicated, I don't doubt that this great church will celebrate its 100th anniversary. Now, as a district superintendent, I'm always observing and reading. And I notice in your order of service that you have visioning information where the members were questioned and you put together a vision list. And I'm so excited to see that vision list. And I will join, as well as Charlotte, will join with you as you seek to fulfill whatever the determination you make that God's vision is for this great church. And please keep in mind, my brothers and sisters of faith, it was men and women of faith who built this great sanctuary. And you who are here for this time in the life of this church, you are men, women, and children of faith. And whatever that vision is that you finalize, know this one thing. For every vision that God gives his people, the Lord will make the provision. Let the church say amen. God bless you.